You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
You're on BFM. This is Nabiha Iqbal with This World Couldn't See Us. We're chatting with Nabiha shortly. You're on BFM. Stick around. Nabiha Iqbal with This World Couldn't See Us. We've got Nabiha on the line. Hello, how are you?
Hey, I'm all right. How are you?
Good. So nice to chat with you. We're really looking forward to having you play in New Zealand, and we've been really loving Dreamer, the record, since you released it earlier this year. It's a surreal thing to kind of be discussing this album, which I know has quite a long and strange relationship with yourself and time, pandemic, family, grief, all sorts of things in it. How are you feeling kind of sitting in this stage, having it, you know, been in the world for a few months now? What's your relationship to this record feel like at the moment?
It's just been the most whirlwind year since it came out, the most amazing experience that now the music's finally out in the world and seeing how it's traveling and how people are responding to it and their relationships to the music as well, because as you mentioned, like, this whole process of making this record was really drawn out and difficult for me for a number of reasons. some people might know that one of the things that happened to me was that my music studio got burgled, and I learned the hard way about not backing up, and I lost 2 years worth of work. It was 2 years of work which I was, you know, that I had put together for the prospective second album, and then I had to start again from scratch. And yeah, it was just a tough time. That was just one of the things that happened. But no, normally I feel like I'm always all right, but during the last couple of years, a lot of difficult things happened to me. I was like the most sick that I've ever been, the most sad I've ever been. There were like a lot of times where I felt so low that I didn't know if I'd ever really be able to finish the record. You know, it just felt like this real, really distant, faint idea, and that I would never be able to grasp it. And actually coming out the other end and finishing the record, one of the main things that it made me realize is just how resilient the human mind and the human body can be, and that it's possible to kind of overcome a lot of difficulties, whether physical or mental. And now that the music's out in the world, I'm just kind of like reaping all the positivity from it. And I've played so many shows now this year. I've been touring basically. I've had shows every week since May. So I've played a lot of gigs. I've met a lot of fans. I've seen how people are reacting to the music, and it just blows me away. I mean, a lot of people have been really emotional about the music, and for me, the whole experience has been really deeply emotional as well, because I made most of the album by myself in the countryside here in England and also up in Scotland, and I was all alone. And when you're working alone in a studio, and you have no idea really about what journey that music's going to take you on once you release it out into the world. And now I'm excited that it's going to bring me to New Zealand for the first time ever.
Oh, we're so excited about that too. And I think it is such an interesting process that this record's had. It's so lovely to hear that you're now getting to sort of experience joy with it, because there's some really joyful parts of this album, but there are some, you know, big ideas and big themes that you've obviously been processing for yourself. When you had to start again with this record after your gear got stolen, what was your approach to that? Did you try and recreate what you'd been making, or did you sort of try and blank slate it and come in fresh?
Well, initially I just couldn't do anything and I couldn't even talk. I was so traumatized. But then it was just a funny, like, just like a weird coincidence of events. So that happened. But then basically the day after my studio got burgled, my grandfather, who's my favorite person in the world, suffered from a brain hemorrhage and then was put in hospital in Pakistan. And this was March 2020, so it was literally, I think it was the end of February, beginning of March 2020, so it was like really the beginning of like COVID lockdown things starting to happen. And so I then booked like a last minute flight with my mom to go out and visit him in Pakistan, because just needed to make sure he's okay. And suddenly the family situation eclipsed the studio burglary situation, because it made me realize, like, no, this is way more important. And then the thing that happened is that whilst I was out there, Pakistan announced a strict lockdown, so then I couldn't even get back to London. And then you know, my grandfather luckily recovered, came back home. I told him about the burglary. He was like, it's done, it's over, don't mope about it, you've got to start again, you've got to start making music. So I was like, okay, fine. But I didn't have, you know, I didn't have anything with me, because I'd left in such a rush. I'd obviously lost my music, and then I was really, like, you know, in a different part of the world. So the approach, I know first I was thinking about trying to recreate the music, but trying to recreate something that wasn't really fully finished in the first place didn't work. It just felt kind of like too forced. And then because I was you know, stranded in Pakistan, I don't want to say stranded, it makes it sound negative, in the end it was a blessing in disguise really, but I was so far away. So I went to a local music shop and I just bought an acoustic guitar, and the beginning of this record as you hear it now started there. And it was just me working on a guitar, coming up with ideas and making voice note recordings of just kind of like guitar chords and riffs and voice, and that was like the embryonic stage of this record.
That's so interesting, because I know you've got such a, I mean, you have such a storied career that people mostly know you from as an electronic musician, so I imagine that was quite a gear shift for you to be totally moving the methodology almost of how you were writing.
Yeah, totally. And it's not like I was doing anything revolutionary. I was literally just going back to basics. Mm. One, out of necessity, and two, because I didn't want to ever be in a situation again where I'd lost my music that was all like on my computer and I couldn't remember what I was doing, because I'm sure there's a lot of other electronic producers out there who can relate. But, you know, once you get going, you know, whether in your studio or at home, and you open up your computer and you start working on ideas, and you come up with something you like and you start building on it, you're not necessarily paying attention to exactly what you're doing or like what notes you're playing or, you know, what's going on, because you're like, oh, it's saved on my computer, so it's fine, I don't need to pay that much attention. And then once it's gone, you can't get it back. So for me, with these new tracks, what I wanted was to just go back to basics. Once I came back to London eventually as well, I stuck to that approach. So all I used was guitar, a loop pedal, and phone recordings. And I did that for maybe about 8 months or so. And it was just like letting the ideas breathe, letting them stay in my head, you know, memorizing things, just letting the song ideas shift and change and, I don't know, just do their own thing before I started recording anything down in a concrete way. And yeah, I'd say it was a good 7 or 8 months before I reached a point where I thought, okay, now I'm going to start making some solid recordings of my ideas. And it's the first time I've ever worked like that, but it was a good challenge, actually. So I think I'll stick to it for now.
Yeah, that's cool. It's nice to discover like a new, as you say, going back to a sort of almost simpler method of songwriting, or some people would see it as simpler, then remembering how that can be such a useful tool for yourself. Must have been quite a lovely thing to experience in the midst of all of that chaos that was going on, particularly looking at the pandemic. You know, what a time to be trying to make any type of art. Did you find it useful for navigating just the weirdness of the few years to have something like this to kind of come back to or touch base with?
I mean, it gave me something to do for sure. I don't think I was thinking about it really in the sense of it being useful or not, but just, you know, it was a different pace of life. And then I'd done so much touring in 2018 and 2019, and like I was really worn out from it. I actually got burnout in 2020, so it was kind of good for me to just stop and just, you know, look after my body and listen to it and just rest and eat properly and exercise and just get back on track. And then once I felt that way, I was like strong again, then that's when I started doing the music. And obviously losing everything, 2 years of work, was a setback, but then it kind of made me more determined. And then at the same time, I'd applied for special COVID funding for artists, and I'd got that funding. And that funding then enabled me to go and do a music residency in Scotland, really in the middle of nowhere. And I felt so lucky to have that opportunity that I said to myself, like, if I don't make the most of it, and if I don't come back with, you know, the album taking shape properly, then I'm not doing justice to myself, and I'm not doing justice to the people who believed in me, who've given me this funding. And so I really set myself the task to say, like, okay, now's the time, and I'm gonna just focus 100% on the music and writing the album. And then, yeah, it worked.
Yeah.
It worked.
That's actually quite a lovely experience. We had similar thing. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people across the world had similar things where there were weird silver linings of the pandemic, some of that COVID funding, some of those strange private moments that you were allowed to have outside of the normal pace of life, actually producing some really incredible art that might not have been made if there wasn't this whole weird context around it as well. I wanted to ask you about Sunflower, which is, I think, maybe the most pointedly joyful track on the record. Perhaps it feels really warm and yellow and bright, and I wondered what you were thinking about when you were writing this one.
Oh, well, that's interesting that you say that track feels like the most joyous to you on the record. But for me, when I was making it, I remember when I kind of came up with the initial idea of that, and I was by myself just in this like residential studio in Suffolk, and I was like, yes, this is going to be a good track. But the lyrical content and the ideas behind it, they're really, I was thinking a lot about people who make amazing art and then die too young.
Oh, so not such a joyful context at all.
No, yeah, that's, yeah, so, I mean, it sounds joyful, the track, but yeah, the ideas behind it aren't really that joyful. Or maybe they are, but in a more nuanced way, I guess. Mm. But it's because, like, one of my really, really best friends who also made music died whilst I was making this record. And it was so sad. I'm still so sad about it. And I was also reading a lot of poetry by people like John Keats and Lord Byron, and then also rediscovering Jeff Buckley, who I used to be obsessed with when I was a teenager. And all of these people are people who made amazing art and then died really young. Mm. And then I was thinking about, like, you know, when you hear Jeff Buckley's voice on Grace and he's not there, but, like, you can hear every breath, every movement, and we can all connect with that. In the same way when you read poetry by Keats or something, and it's like, what does it mean and what do they leave behind in their work and our relationships with those people after they're gone? And that was the thinking behind Sunflower.
Oh, it's a beautiful track. But I feel like there is a joy in that. There's a celebration, perhaps, is a better way of putting it. There is something about it that I keep finding myself returning to. What an amazing context for it to have come out of. Nabiha, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you, and we're so excited to have you in New Zealand actually really soon on the 17th of January, Neck of the Woods. People can still grab tickets now, but I wouldn't muck around because this is going to be a really, really special show. Thank you so much for speaking with us. We'll see you really soon.
Thanks so much for having me on the show, and I hope you have a great day because I know you're already in tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I just can't wait. It's going to be my first time in New Zealand. I'm just looking forward to seeing the country and experiencing everything. And if anyone has any tips for me, tourist tips, let me know. You can always get in touch on my socials. And if you come to the show, then I can't wait to see you there as well.
Excellent. Yeah, we'll definitely see you there. I hope we can turn on a nice summer for you. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Yeah, thanks. Bye.
Steps of the sun, comfort me, sweet golden one. I am lost in your mystery, so gentle, so deep. You left your soul on the earth, you left without knowing its worth. I knew it was love, and I felt it was glory. Never told me the end of the story. I knew it was love, and I felt it was glory. But you never told me the end of the story. Meet me under the sunflower. Meet me under the sunflower.
Nabiha Iqbal with the track Sunflower from the album Dreamer. Nabiha is coming to New Zealand in January, playing at the Neck of the Woods on the 17th. Thanks so much to Nabiha. It was really lovely to chat with her. I know a lot of people are excited for that gig. Also, because we've been getting you to text us and tell us what albums you've been loving from this year. That has been a very popular choice from people. So yeah, make sure you grab a ticket before you miss out on that one.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.